Now tell me about your life, she said.
Mine, I said. Mine was very different in every way imaginable. Color, gender, geography, family circumstances. I was born in Berlin. Back then, you stayed in the hospital 7 days, so I was 1 week old when I went into the military. I grew up on every base we've got. I went to West Point. I'm still in the military. I always will be. That's it, really.
You got family?
I recalled the note from my sergeant. Your brother called. No message. A mother and a brother, I said.
Ever been married?
No. You?
No,
she said.
Seeing anyone?
Not right now.
Me either.
We drove on, a mile, and another.
Can you imagine a life outside the service?
She asked. Is there one?
I grew up out there. I might be going back.
You civilians are a mystery to me, I said. Summer parked outside Kramer's room, I guessed for authenticity's sake, a little less than 5 hours after we'd left Walter Reed. She seemed satisfied with her average speed. She shut the motor down and smiled. I'll take the lounge bar, I said. You speak to the kid in the motel office. Do the good cop thing. Tell him the bad cop is right behind you. We slid out into the cold and the dark. The fog was back. The streetlights burned through it. I felt cramped and airless. I stretched and yawned and then straightened my coat and watched Summer head past the Coke machine. Her skin flared red as she stepped through its glow. I crossed the road and headed for the bar. The lot was as full as it had been the night before. Cars and trucks were parked all around the building. The ventilators were working hard again. I could see smoke and smell beer in the air. I could hear music thumping away. The neon was bright. I pulled the door and stepped into the noise. The crowd was wall-to-wall again. The same spotlights were burning. There was a different girl naked on the stage. There was the same barrel-chested guy half in shadow behind the register. I couldn't see his face, but I knew he was looking at my lapels. Where Kramer had worn Armored's crossed cavalry sabers with a charging tank over them, I had the military police's crossed flintlock pistols, gold and shiny. Not the most popular sight in a place like that.
Cover charge, the guy at the register said.
It was hard to hear him. The music was very loud. How much, I said.
$100,
he said. I don't think so.
Okay, $200.
Hilarious, I said.
I don't like cops in here.
Can't think why, I said.
Look at me.
I looked at him. There was nothing much to see. The edge of a downlighter beam lit up a big stomach and a big chest and thick, short, tattooed forearms, and hands the size and shape of frozen chickens, with heavy silver rings on most of the fingers. But the guy's shoulders and his face were in deep shadow above them, like he was half hidden by a curtain. I was talking to a guy I couldn't see.
You're not welcome here, he said.
I'll get over it. I'm not an unduly sensitive person.
You're not listening, he said. This is my place, and I don't want you in it.
I'll be quick.
Leave, now.
No.
Look at me.
He leaned forward into the light, slowly. The downlighter beam rode up his chest, up to his neck, onto his face. It was an incredible face. It had started out ugly, and it had gotten much worse. He had straight razor scars all over it. They crisscrossed it like a lattice. They were deep and white and old. His nose had been busted and badly reset and busted again and badly reset again many times over. He had brows thick with scar tissue. Two small eyes were staring out at me from under them. He was maybe 40, maybe 5'10", maybe 300 pounds. He looked like a gladiator who had survived 20 years deep inside the catacombs. I smiled. This thing with a face is supposed to impress me? With the dramatic lighting and all?
It should tell you something.
Well, it tells me you lost a lot of fights. You want to lose another, that's fine with me. He said nothing. Or I could put this place off limits to every enlisted man at Bird. I could see what that does to your bar profits. He said nothing. But I don't want to do that, I said. No reason to penalize my guys just because you're an asshole. He said nothing. So I guess I'll ignore you. He sat back. The shadows slid back into place like a curtain.
I'll see you later, he said from out of the darkness. Somewhere, sometime, that's for sure. That's a promise. You can count on that.
Oh, now I'm scared, I said. I moved on and pressed into the crowd. I made it through a packed bottleneck and into the main part of the building. It was much bigger inside than it had looked. It was a large, low square, full of noise and people. There were dozens of separate areas, speakers everywhere, loud music, flashing lights. There were plenty of civilians in there, plenty of military, too. I could spot them by their haircuts and their clothes. Off-duty soldiers always dress distinctively. They try to look like everybody else, and they fail. They're always a little clean and out of date. They were all looking at me as I passed them by. They weren't pleased to see me. I looked for a sergeant. Looked for a few lines around the eyes. I saw four likely candidates, 6 feet back from the edge of the main stage. Three of them saw me and turned away. The fourth saw me and paused for a second, and then turned towards me. Like he knew he'd been selected. He was a compact guy, maybe 5 years older than me. Special forces, probably. There were plenty of them at Bird, and he had the look. He was having a good time, that was clear. He had a smile on his face and a bottle in his hand. Cold beer, dewy with moisture. He raised it like a toast, like an invitation to approach. So I went up close to him and spoke in his ear. "Spread the word for me," I said. "This is nothing official. Nothing to do with our guys. Something else entirely."
"Like what?"
he said. "Lost property," I said. "Nothing important. Everything's cool." He said nothing. "Special forces?" I said. He nodded.
"Lost property?"
"No big deal," I said. "Just something that went missing across the street." He thought about it, and then he raised his bottle again and clinked it against where mine would have been if I'd bought one. It was a clear display of acceptance, like a mime, in all the noise. But even so, a thin stream of men started up, shuffling towards the exit. Maybe 20 grunts left during my first 2 minutes in the room. MPs have that effect. No wonder the guy with the face didn't want me in there. A waitress came up to me. She was wearing a black T-shirt cut off about 4 inches below her neck, and black shorts cut off about 4 inches below the waist, and black shoes with very high heels. Nothing else. She stood there and looked at me until I ordered something. I asked for a bud, and I paid about 8 times its value. Took a couple of sips, and then went looking for whores. They found me first. I guess they wanted me out of sight before I emptied the place completely. Before I reduced their customer base to zero. Two of them came straight at me. One was a platinum blonde, the other was a brunette. Both were wearing tiny, tight sheath dresses that sparkled with all kinds of synthetic fibers. The blonde got in front of the brunette and headed her off, came clattering straight towards me, awkward in absurd clear plastic heels. The brunette wheeled away and headed for the Special Forces sergeant I'd spoken to. He waved her off with what looked like an expression of genuine distaste. The blonde kept on track and came right up next to me and leaned on my arm, stretched up tall until I could feel her breathe in my ear.
"Happy New Year," she said.
"You too," I said.
"I haven't seen you in here before,"
she said, like I was the only thing missing from her life. Her accent wasn't local. She wasn't from the Carolinas. She wasn't from California, either. Georgia or Alabama, probably.
"You new in town?"
she asked, loud because of the music. I smiled. I'd been in more whorehouses than I cared to count. All MPs have. Every single one is the same, and every single one is different. They all have different protocols. But the "Are you new in town?" question was a standard opening gambit. It invited me to start the negotiations. It insulated her from a solicitation charge. "What's the deal here?" I asked her. She smiled shyly, like she'd never been asked such a thing before. Then she told me I could watch her on stage in exchange for dollar tips, or I could spend 10 to get a private show in a back room. She explained the private show could involve touching, and to make sure I was paying attention, she ran her hand up the inside of my thigh. I could see how a guy could be tempted. She was cute. She looked to be about 20. Except for her eyes. Her eyes looked like a 50-year-old. "What about something more?" I said. "Someplace else we could go?"
"We can talk about that during the private show."
She took me by the hand and led me past their dressing room door and through a velvet curtain into a dim room behind the stage. It wasn't small. It was maybe 30 feet by 20. It had an upholstered bench running around the whole perimeter. It wasn't especially private, either. There were about 6 guys in there, each of them with a naked woman on his lap. The blonde girl led me to a space on the bench and sat me down. She waited until I came out with my wallet and paid her $10. Then she draped herself over me and snuggled in tight. The way she sat made it impossible for me not to put my hand on her thigh. Her skin was warm and smooth. "So where can we go?" I asked.
"You're in a hurry," she said.
She moved around and eased the hem of her dress up over her hips. She wasn't wearing anything underneath it. "Where are you from?" I asked her.
"Atlanta,"
she said. "What's your name?"
"Sin," she said, spelled S-I-N.
I was fairly certain that was a professional alias.
"What's yours?"
she said. "Reacher," I said. There was no point adopting an alias of my own. I was fresh from the widow visit, still in Class A's, with my nameplate big and obvious on my right jacket pocket.
"That's a nice name,"
she said automatically. I was fairly certain that she said it to everybody. Quasimodo, Hitler, Stalin, Pol Pot.
"That's a nice name."
She moved her hand, started with the top button of my jacket and undid it all the way down, smoothed her fingers inside across my chest, under my tie, on top of my shirt. "There's a motel across the street," I said. She nodded against my shoulder.
"I know there is,"
she said. "I'm looking for whoever went over there last night with a soldier."
"Are you kidding?"
"No." She pushed against my chest.
"Are you here to have fun or ask questions?"
"Questions," I said. She stopped moving, said nothing. "I'm looking for whoever went over to the motel last night with a soldier."
"Get real," she said. "We all go over to the motel with soldiers. There's practically a groove worn in the pavement. Look carefully and you can see it."
"I'm looking for someone who came back a little sooner than normal, maybe." She said nothing. Maybe she was a little spooked. She said nothing. "Maybe she met the guy there," I said. "Maybe she got a call earlier in the day." Sin eased her butt up off my knee and pulled her dress down as far as it would go, which wasn't very far. Then she traced her fingertips across my lapel badge.
"We don't answer questions,"
she said. Why not? I saw her glance at the velvet curtain, like she was looking through it and all the way across the big square room to the register by the door.